Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
On this episode of the Oklahoma Breakdown with Iker and Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino, we give you the latest from OU spring practice. They put the pads on, and we begin our position previews with OU's tight ends. Then we finish up with winners and losers of the weekend. Please download and subscribe to the podcast, rate it 5 stars, and write us a good review. Follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search Oklahoma Breakdown on any of those, and you'll find us. All right. Our man Michael Hostie will kick this thing off. It's time for the Oklahoma Breakdown. It's a beautiful Monday, March 28th, and you're listening to the Oklahoma Breakdown with Iker and Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino. Riverwind is Oklahoma City's premier casino experience, and your health and safety are Riverwind's number one priorities. There are so many reasons why Riverwind is consistently voted OKC's number one casino, but it all starts with their amazing variety of gaming thrills and excitement. Riverwind's beautiful award-winning environment plays host to more than 2,800 of the latest electronic games, with a huge selection of table games, including blackjack, blackjack match, roulette, and Teddy's favorite, maybe, craps. No matter what your game, Riverwind has it in spades and hearts. And Riverwind will be featuring live music and local food trucks every month starting in May for the Beats and Bites Festival. All right. Performers include the Randy Rogers Band and Scotty McCreary. If you need help finding your way, just visit riverwind.com. Riverwind Casino, simply the best. Now, recording this Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Both of us, we got some stuff going on tonight, so knocking it out. We'll get it out early. So I know in the opening I say it's Monday, March 28th, but that's just, I think most people listen to this on Sunday, Ted, so it's just, we try to cover our bases there, you know?
Yeah, you got to. But all in all, beautiful weekend. And I, for one, not upset about getting it wrapped up a little early today.
Absolutely. So please leave us a 5-star review and a nice comment while you're at it. If you are interested in sponsoring the podcast, you can email theoklahomabreakdown@gmail.com. And also a reminder, we are going to record our first Q&A episode this week. And there are 3 ways to get us questions. You can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and comment with your question. You can email us your question to theoklahomabreakdown@gmail.com, or you can tweet the podcast Twitter and use #AskOKB. And we're going to sort through some questions. We're going to answer a bunch of them, Ted. Should be fun.
Nope, I can't wait. Those are always good.
Speaking of fun, the Oklahoma Sooners have 3 spring practices under their belts, and really, the first real one took place on Saturday. Put the pads on, baby, and started things off with what they are calling the W drill. Let's just make it clear. It's not the Oklahoma drill. No. The W drill. Call it what you must, but hey, When it comes down to it, pads were popping to set the tone on the practice field for the real first practice of spring ball, Ted. You got to love it. You love to see it.
Yeah. The W drill, I guess, is the new version of the Oklahoma drill that you cannot do anymore. It's got to be a non-contact drill, so to speak. So you do what you can with what you've got. And this is kind of their way to set the tone in the pads, get the mindset going a little bit, wake everyone up, say, this is the tempo that we're rolling with. So good stuff.
Yeah. I'm not asking questions. They did what they did. I'm sure everything was cleared through the proper channels. And I will say that that drill is kind of a rite of passage for anyone that plays at Oklahoma. And it's a little different in spring than it is in training camp, but there is a certain anxiety to the buildup of having to do that drill, especially if you're a young player, especially if you are one of these guys that is an early enrollee. Like, you're thinking about it for a while. Like, you get done with that second practice where you're not allowed to wear pads, the like acclimation period or whatever, and you know it's coming. You know it's coming. Yep. And it was, I would love to hear some of the conversations from the young guys, but like, oh my gosh, I'm just so glad it's over. Because I remember that feeling, being like, okay, I didn't get destroyed. I held my own. I didn't get embarrassed. And now it's over. Thank God.
The interesting part about it is through most of practice, it's kind of hard to explain. Like, even in the drills that you're doing with the offense, like the offensive line is mainly watching the offensive line. The linebackers are mainly watching the linebackers. Like, everyone's kind of coaching their positions. But whenever you do a drill like this, you know that everyone on the entire team is going to watch every rep and watch every single person individually. And like, one of the goals is to just don't look horrible on film. Like, whatever it is that you do, just try to survive. Don't do anything memorable as far as being pancaked or anything like that. Just try and survive in advance.
Stalemate is a win. That was always my motto. Stalemate is a win. But you do not want to be the guy that, however it happens, and there's multiple ways it can happen, you don't want to be the guy that ends up on his back somehow. Like, that's, and it happens. It does happen. And it's not a good feeling. It's not a good, you just don't, and you feel bad for whoever it happens to, depending on which side of the ball you're on and who it happens to. But I'm sure it happened. Not throwing any names out there, but I'm sure it happened. And that's an awful feeling. Awful, yep. Awful feeling.
It's, hey, you got to establish the ground level and work up from there, right?
Exactly. So now that the Sooners have three practices under their belt, just, you know, touch on some of the things that we've heard coming out of practice. And, you know, speaking of that W drill, it does sound like they're really pleased with how the offensive line is looking right now. And I think there's a general sense of optimism. And, you know, after the last couple of seasons where it hasn't been up to the standard up front, I do think Bill Beedenbow has, you know, he's taken that personally. And these guys, you know, you look at some young guys that need to make the next step, whether that be, you know, an Anton Harrison, a Wanye Morris, a Savion Byrd at the tackle positions. You've got some transfer guys that you feel good about in the interior, but it does seem like, you know, and I'm not trying to make it sound like they got a finished product or anything like that. They absolutely don't. But if this offensive line group stays healthy, they feel good about what they've seen from who they think are going to be their key contributors going forward. Because, I mean, they got after the defensive line a little bit in that W drill. So I think that one of the big question marks that we talked about going into spring ball for the Sooners, offensive line was one of them. And I want to continue to hear good things come out of spring practice about the offensive line. That would make me feel a lot better about this football team in 2022.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, a lot of times, especially if you're just installing a new system and, you know, just kind of learning the process, learning some of the coaches, right, there's a heavy emphasis on like what the core fundamentals are, right? And, you know, sometimes early on, it's maybe the offensive line is staying on double teams longer than they typically would. instead of sifting up to the next level quicker, just to try and like reinforce getting movement and punch at the point of attack, and like whatever those key principles are to like the running game, you tend to hang your hat on those early on in spring. And it sounds like all that stuff's gone really good. And, you know, it's going to be a learning process. You know, Venables does a lot of stuff defensively, and, you know, not only do the defensive guys have to learn a new system, they have to learn a new system. They have to learn a new offense, right? Because you get used to defending the same old offense, right? And you get kind of, you kind of understand the tempo and the formations and the adjustments and some of the motions that they do. So now they've got a whole new offense coming at them. They've got a new defense that they're trying to learn. And, you know, they also have new defensive coaches that they're trying to adjust to and kind of figure out like how practice goes, like what's this going to be like. And on the offensive side, you there's a little bit more of carryover with some of the offensive coaches. So maybe this is a long-winded way of me to make excuses for the defense that the
offense it sounds
is
like
winning early on, but I think there's some legitimate claims in there.
Yeah. And I will say this, everything I was told, man, really competitive practice on Saturday between the offense and defense. And this is just part of the new mentality that Brent Venables brings. And maybe it's just part of having a defensive head coach as opposed to an offensive head coach. You get in pads for the first day of spring ball. You're still trying to get your installs in place on both sides of the ball. You got all kinds of new coaches. You got all kinds of new early enrollees and transfers, and you do the W drill and you do short yardage goal line and inside run period.
Yep.
All three of those in your first day in pads. That's about as physical as it gets in today's day and age of college football. And yep. I will say this, I will defend your defense. It sounds like the defensive line got after the O-line and short yard goal line. So that's there's a win for your guys. I'll continue to think that my guys are a little ahead of yours mentally. And I think the offense maybe just a little ahead of the defense, right? Like you said, a little complex on the defensive side of things with BV, but just the physicality, the mentality, like just think of where you have to be from a mental focus standpoint as a player, knowing that like, hey, I'm going into a padded practice and it is going to be like, we are about to get this thing on. Like it is no longer, you know, not doing inside run. It's about as physical of a practice as you can construct now in college football.
That's good. That's what you've got to have. I mean, you could talk about all kinds of different offenses and styles and game plan and schemes, but you've got to be able to run the ball and you've got to be able to stop the run. That's where it starts and finishes. I mean, that's the deciding factor in the majority of football games played at any level. So yeah, let's get into it early. Let's specialize in both of those.
W drill, inside period, or some people call it 9-on-7, whatever you want to call it. And then short yardage goal line. Oh boy. Well,
I guarantee that there was also some like individual wasn't like, I guarantee there's some like defensively, like backers tackling stuff and individual, same thing for secondary. And I'm sure like offensive line was pretty physical too in some of their stuff.
Yeah. So here's something that I was thinking about when it comes to Jeff Lebby and the way that he wants to play offensively. Like we've talked a lot about how quickly they want to play when it comes to their tempo. And I'm interested to see how this progresses throughout spring practice, because you've got two new systems that need to be installed, and you're trying to get these guys to understand all of the intricacies of it. But one of the big things, remember Lebby said what, fast, physical, and I forget the
fearless.
Other fearless. Is that it?
Think so.
Nice. That's a good one. But fast is one of the three F's. And I know physical starts with the P. Leave me alone, people. But it's hard to, I would assume, with where they're at from an installation standpoint, it's hard for him to get to go as fast as he wants to go right now on the practice field, because, and maybe this is something that a lot of people don't understand, you've got both sides trying to learn the system. Unless you're moving the ball in like a scrimmage mode, which they have not done yet, it's pretty difficult to get that tempo going, because when you're practicing, especially early in spring ball, and you get to team periods where you will be moving the ball, all that stuff is scripted beforehand for the most part. And the staff talks about all of those details before they go out for practice. And that's so, you know, the down and distance is scripted. You predetermine if you're moving the football in the team periods, you predetermine how far you're going to move it each snap. That's so the equipment manager knows what yard line, what hash to put the ball down for the next play. So I just don't know how much of that like hyper tempo Lebby is able to use right now. Clearly they're going to build up to that, but I just don't know with where they're at right now from an install standpoint, if he can ramp up the tempo all the way that he wants to do it.
Probably not. I don't know. That's an interesting, that's something that's going to be really hard to practice anyways, you know. Even if you're dealing with a scout team in training camp later on, whenever offensive defense are going to split up, it's still going to be really hard to replicate exactly what you want it to look like. So I don't know. My guess is early on, it's probably not going to be all that fast. And just like anything else, the more opportunities, the more practice, and what little they may get in a day-to-day practice, like they'll probably slowly ramp things up. And like probably the speed that they're going right now that the players think is fast is just barely entry level with the speed at which they want to go, I'm sure.
Yeah, which is interesting to think about. So we'll see. And sounds like Dylan Gabriel, clearly he's got to improve some things, but he's operating this offense really efficiently, and they're very pleased with where they're at. And yeah, can't wait to see how they progress. You know, still got, you know, already three down, only got 12 more to go. When it goes so quickly sometimes in spring. Okay, so they got the three practices out of the way. What type of buzz defensively? Like what are some of the things that you're kind of hearing?
Well, it sounds like defensively it's going to be a work in progress trying to get everyone. I think one of the big things for Venables, like defensively, is just trying to get everyone up to the expectation of what they're, how they're expected to play, like with the physicality, with the effort, with all of those different, just like learning how to practice is kind of where they are right now. And that's probably a full team thing, not just a defensive thing. Personnel wise, it sounds like defensively, they like a lot of what they have to work with. You're just trying to figure out some of the exact spots with some of those guys and trying to really, really learn more about the personnel. You know, that, like, for instance, inside backer, I think they like a lot of the talent that they have. They're just trying to figure out who those guys are going to be, what their real strengths and weaknesses are. You know, in the secondary, I think the secondary is going to be interesting, because I think they really like the personnel. It's just a matter of sifting through who's going to be at safety, who's going to be at corner, who's going to be at nickel. And there's some of those guys that have played all of those positions here in the past, and they're just trying to figure out where the best kind of group is. And so whenever we've heard they're going in without a depth chart, I think that's true. You know, part of it is letting everyone earn their way. The other part of it is like they're honestly still learning their roster and see where they want some of those guys to play. I think they like the defensive line. I think there's some good solid play there. Maybe don't have any what you would just call guys that are blowing things away right now, talent-wise, but a good solid group on the edge. There's a couple of guys that are, I think whenever they started, they felt like maybe we're going to be a little limited in that spot. But as these three practices have kind of played out, there's maybe been a little bit of change of opinion there. There's been some good guys rolling in at the edge positions, which is, like, we know one of the glaring questions or concerns for this defense moving forward is that edge spot. You know, that's what makes a lot of these defenses go. You got to have someone on the edge that can do multiple things, pressure the quarterback. And I think there was some concern there early on, and starting to be a guy or two emerge that could do a lot of things.
Yeah. Saw the clip of Miguel Chavis, the guy who's coaching those edge guys, right? Saying, now he's got a deep voice. I'm not even going to try to do it, but what'd he say? You won't play for me if you're not violent. I liked hearing that.
Yep. No, that's right. And they've got a couple of guys there that are big and physical, and I think just it's taking the staff a little bit to honestly assess what they're seeing there. And at first maybe looked a little possibly slow and limited, but as especially when they got into pads, like, okay, maybe we've got something here. So it's going to be fun to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Okay. I guess the last thing as far as, you know, these last couple of days for OU football, big recruiting weekend this weekend. And we continue to see big time prospects saying extremely positive things about their experiences with Brent Venables and his staff at Oklahoma. And those prospects that were there on Saturday, they got to see him in his element there on the practice field. And that probably gave him a better understanding of what the intensity and focus that BV always talks about looks like when it comes to football. And I will say, I saw that Rocky Kalmus and his son were there. And we've had several people say that we need to get Rocky Kalmus on here, Ted. And I'm leaving that up to you. That's your responsibility. I don't know, Rocky. I assume you do. Maybe I'm just assuming that all stud Butkus award-winning linebackers know each other at OU, but I am. No,
absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, you played with the guy.
Played with the guy. Absolutely. No Rock. Don't see him a whole lot because he still lives in Tennessee, but yeah, we can explore that for sure. I think it's cool that he was in town. Got to see BV. His son is pretty good athlete now, really good player, good all around athlete. So that was cool to see him in town for sure.
Yeah. And a lot of big time prospects in town. So, man, it's going to be really fun to see how recruiting goes over these next couple of years for Brent Venables. And then who knows when OU goes to the SEC, I expect that to help improve things on the recruiting trail. But yeah, it seems like they're doing everything the right way. Okay, so we did it last year. People really enjoyed it. So we're going to do it again this year. And that is our positional previews for OU football. And we're going to start this year's previews with the tight ends room. But first, the only place to stop when you're road tripping is Love's Travel Stops. Love's has over 560 locations in 41 states offering 24-hour access to clean and safe places. Wherever your road trip needs are, Love's has it. Fuel, fresh food, all the snacks and drinks, including my favorite, yes, Java Amore. That coffee is fantastic. Love's also has you covered if you forget your phone charger or headphones. They've expanded their mobile-to-go zone so you can grab any of that stuff there. Make sure you download the Love's Connect app for exclusive offers from today's most popular brands. The Love's Connect app also includes a route planner and store locator. When you see that red neon heart on the highway, stop in and say hi at Love's Travel Stops. For a full list of what Love's has to offer, visit loves.com.
Opolis Clothing is the exclusive home for all of Oklahoma Breakdown merchandise. If you want to live your life in buttery, soft comfort, go to opolisclothing.com. That's O-P-O-L-I-S clothing.com and use our promo code TED, T-E-D, for 10% off your entire order. Still get a discount on all the OU and OKC Thunder gear as well. That's opolisclothing.com. Use the promo code TED for 10% off. Buttery soft, 10% off.
And we'd had a lot of people ask about OU softball gear. Opolis got it approved from OU. They now have softball shirts, Ted.
There we go.
Use promo code TED, 10% off OU softball shirts.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Okay, tight ends. So for those of you that aren't familiar with Jeff Lebby's offense, he lives in 11 personnel. So he plays with a tight end on the field. Now, going back and watching his offenses at Ole Miss, he stays in 11 personnel a lot of time. So that means one back and one tight end. But he will also get in some 10 personnel, meaning one back, no tight ends. But he will also get in 12 personnel, meaning one running back, two tight ends. At this point, from the conversations I've had, I think there are four main guys to talk about in the tight end room. And remember, this group can expand. It is a long time between now and when this thing kicks off for the 2022 season. Like, a lot can happen. But I think we got to start the tight end conversation with your favorite. I mean, he's your guy, Braden Willis. Go. He's had a really nice offseason. He's had a great start to spring ball. They think he can be a significant weapon for this offense at tight end. But clearly with Braden, it's all about him staying healthy. But he has done everything the staff has asked him to do, everything the new strength staff has asked him to do. He has become a leader. He's being more vocal as a leader now. And he looks the part. He certainly does. But it would be awfully, awfully beneficial for this football team if he could become a pass-catching weapon.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of the I don't know how they use him is going to kind of depend on the spring, I'm guessing, whenever they get a full grasp of what they've got in their tight end room and what the capabilities are. And I'm sure a lot of it is already predetermined just by the style of the offense. But if you've got special players at different positions, you're going to build your offense accordingly. So I think it's a big year for Braden Willis. We've seen what he can do when he's split out, what he can do in some mismatch situations. He's a gritty, tough blocker at the line of scrimmage. So, no, I agree. I think it could be a really big year for him. I think he's faster and a better receiver than he's had the ability to showcase so far at OU. Hopefully,
I agree.
This is an opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't know what's realistic to expect from him. I don't think he's all of a sudden going to be some 800 to 1,000 yard receiver. Like, and maybe, I hope I'm wrong. That would be awesome. But even if he's just a guy that becomes a huge red zone threat, right? Guy that ends up, all of a sudden you look up, he's caught 7-8 touchdowns on the year or something like that. Like, just adding that element, like a big physical tight end that can create mismatches with linebackers and safeties, like that would be massive for this team. It's huge for any offense. So I just don't know what type of jump to expect. Like, I think we all agree there's going to be a jump, but just how big is it going to be? And I don't know if we'll know till the fall, right? But one thing that I tell people all the time is, you know, when I was a player, when I moved positions, I gained a ton of confidence in spring ball. A ton of confidence going through those reps, blocking the guys on the other side of the ball. And that gave me the confidence and the belief in myself to be like, okay, I can do this. Like I can do this. I feel like this spring, and I know Braden Willis has played a ton of football at OU, but this spring is going to be a confidence builder for him if it goes really, really well, which it sounds like it's off to a good start. Like if he can, you know, catch some really nice balls in practice and make some big plays in practice, like I think he knows the physical talents he has, like, but you still got to go do it, right? And I think spring is the perfect opportunity for him to prove not only to the new, you know, the new offensive coordinator, but to himself, like, hey, I can be a big time playmaker at the tight end position. And once you build that confidence up, then that, I mean, it goes a long way. It's so important. So I think this spring is especially important for him to build confidence as a big time playmaker for this team.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has started for him in the bowl game and, you know, throughout winter workouts where he's kind of transitioned into almost like the one of like the senior leader. He's like kind of the guy on the team now, you know what I'm saying? He's like the elder statesman of the team, and I think that role is something that he can really build on in the spring. And he's totally comfortable and confident in himself as a football player. So, yeah, you know, and I just – a lot of it is going to be determined on how much Lebby has with the tight end in his offense, you know. And like I said, he'll build some of that in there, but some offenses just don't have much tight end. Like, I wouldn't expect to start seeing Braden Willis as a split-out receiver just like as his main role. I think it's going to be boot, play action, some of your more traditional type of tight end routes where he sees action, but that doesn't mean that has to be limiting. You can still do a lot from that type of role.
And you kind of made the point. If Braden Willis shows Jeff Lebby, he can, you know, run short, intermediate, you know, run vertical routes. He's going to get him on the field. And he's going to dial stuff up for him. But it's like, that's where in spring, you got to show what you can do because, you know, there's no doubt coaches set players up for success, right? Dialing up certain plays for guys, right? That's what the best coaches do. They say, okay, how do I get my playmakers to football? Well, players also got to show coaches that they deserve to have stuff dialed up for them. You know what I mean? Yep. So I think that is, that's going to be important for Braden in, you know, here in spring ball to show that he's a guy that they need to have on the field, not only as a blocker, you know, he's proven that he's more than capable of being a versatile piece, right? Inline guy, put him in the backfield, that split zone action, all that stuff. He's shown that, but he hasn't necessarily shown consistently that he can be a big playmaker in the passing game. If he shows him that, dude's going to be on the field a whole lot.
Yep. Agree.
Yeah. All right. Next guy, Daniel Parker. And let me tell you, the staff loves Daniel Parker. He's a blocking tight end, right? That it has been described to me as an absolute ass kicker and takes pride in going and knocking the absolute hell out of people. And they think from what they've seen so far, especially in these couple spring practices, they think he can do more than just be a blocker, right? And the comparison I'll make, and not just because he's one of my best friends, the way that the Chiefs use Blake Bell, where he's on the field a ton, right? But he's mainly out there as a blocker. But if you look at some of the balls that Blake has caught over the years with the Chiefs, a lot of stuff in the flat, a lot of delayed routes, a lot of routes where the tight end's kind of the outlet, right? Where you're reading things deep to short in a progression and you just make some nice, easy catches and you rack up a couple of 8-yard, 10-yard gains, you move the chains. Like, I think Daniel Parker can be that blocking tight end that can also do some decent things in the short and intermediate passing game. You mentioned like off bootleg stuff like that. Like there's always that guy in the flat, Ted, and he's always open. He's always open because defenses are by design, leave that guy open. So I think Daniel Parker, he's going to be a guy that they want at the point of attack in the run game, but also a guy that they are more than comfortable with throwing him the football, got good hands, all that stuff. And they just love this guy's attitude.
Yeah. And as much as we know Levy loves to throw the ball deep, you know, whenever you have deep route progressions that run the entire defense off down the field, and you got a tight end that's sitting there in protection, either they've pancaked the guy that he's blocking with the tackle, or someone dropped into coverage and he hangs and waits, and quarterback still got the ball, just natural little step outside a little bit and catch that flat and be the outlet. And those plays can turn into, like you said, big time plays that keep the drive alive, move the chains. And I just love that. It sounds like there's going to be a heavy emphasis on running the ball physically. And when you have like Brayden Willis I don't want to say that he's not a big tight end. I mean, he's got good size to him, but he's not like a physically imposing blocker. He's scrappy as hell as a blocker, but not physically imposing. But when you have two guys that kind of have that type of mindset whenever it comes to blocking, that's a weapon, man. When you could dominate the edge of a defense with great tight end blocking, that makes it really tough. If you can't win the edge, you got problems.
Big problems. Big problems. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, like, if Daniel Parker turns into just some kind of dominant guy there blocking on the edge. I mean, how much 12 personnel is Jeff Levy going to get in? Because if he's earning his way onto the field, like that's where offense coordinators, they're going to put their best players on the field. Like, how do I get my best 11 on the field as often as I can? If Daniel Parker turns into one of those guys, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of personnel breakdown, you know, like what percentage they're in 10 or what percentage they're in 11 or 12. It'll be really interesting to see how that goes. If they feel like Daniel Parker's a guy that just needs to be on the field quite a bit.
Well, if you're 12 personnel and you've got and we talk about this a lot about the benefits of having guys that can do multiple things. Like if you're 12 personnel and you got two tight ends and they have the ability to absolutely mush you at the line of scrimmage whenever they're in a pair on one side, you got to get out of nickel and you got to get in. You got to get in base and you got to have an extra backer in there. Well, guess what happens when the extra backer jogs onto the field? Now you're a 12 personnel, but you're split out and that extra backer isn't up there winning the line of scrimmage like he's intended. He's out there covering Brayden Willis in space. So that matchup ends up going back to the offense. So my guess is if 12 personnel can be that dangerous of a weapon for Jeff Levy, he'll stay in it all day long if they can win the line of scrimmage and force defenses to try to adapt.
Yeah.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Caden Helms, 6'5", 221, freshman, and I think he can help this season. I do. From everything I've heard, it sounds like he can be a weapon in the passing game because this guy's got size. He is an athlete, and he can be an absolute mismatch with linebackers and safeties. Now, of course, he's a freshman, right? He needs to add weight. He needs to add strength. But he is a big-time talent. And one thing that I was told that I did like hearing was, like, he is, you know, he's a weapon in the pass game, and he is going to be – they think he's going to be really damn good down the line. But
that's awesome.
He's also not afraid of contact, right? He will get in there and mix it up. So I do think Caden Helms is a guy that, with his skill set, even as a young player, where, you know, he's got a big frame, and there's certainly room to grow, room for gains there. But I just think he's going to be too talented for him to not be on the field some, just as a pure threat in the passing game.
Yeah, right. And to have young guys that can step up and physically, now remember, these are early arrivals, so supposed to be in the spring semester of their senior year. Right? The fact that they can step in there with the big boys on the line of scrimmage and, you know, not be worried about getting in there and hitting somebody, having some physicality to them, that's big. And, you know, I don't know how quick he'll find his way on the field. It could be hard with two tight ends in front of you that kind of offer the same thing. But at 6'5", 220-plus pounds, if you could be a great wide receiving threat as a tight end, you cannot teach size. You can't coach size. And at 6'5", that's hard for any defensive back to try and contend with, and especially at the nickel spot, who would be nickel or safety, who would typically – be guarding that guy when he split out. It's a big weapon.
No doubt. And last guy, Jason Llewellyn. Checking in at 6'5", 260. So nice. I mean, all right, here we go. But when you look at him, he seems more of like a, I don't know if this is the best way to put it, but like a throwback tight end, a guy, because tight end has become so associated with catching the football and making big plays in the passing game. Like, I feel like, you know, when we have a conversation about the best tight ends, like that's what makes a great tight end now, is if you are basically just a jumbo receiver. But for Llewellyn, he looks more of like an old school tight end, like what I think makes a good tight end, where he can play in line. You can split him out maybe a little bit. He can play fullback. He can be an H-back. Like, he can do a little bit of everything. And if my read on him is correct, this is going to be an interesting comparison, but as a guy that I played with and that I have an incredible amount of respect for, if he can be Brody Eldridge with better hands, then he's going to be one hell of a player at OU. Because a lot of people forget, Brody ran 4.72 at the combine. He got drafted in the fifth round. And it was because he was one tough SOB.
Yep.
And I think Llewellyn, he's got that type of makeup and real good athlete. I don't know if he's going to be some just, you know, devastating pass catcher, right? I don't know if he's going to be a 1,000-yard tight end or anything like that. I don't think that's what he's going to be, but I just think he's going to be a good football player. And I could see him finding his way onto the field a little bit in his freshman year, because if he can figure out kind of the ins and outs of the offense, because they're going to ask him a lot to do with the skill set he's got. And that's not easy, right? That's going to be a lot on him mentally. If he can figure it out, and this could be, you know, the start to a really, really solid career.
At 6'5", 260 as a freshman, he's going to have to be careful. He's dangerously flirting with that tackle position, right?
From experience, I would say, yes, keep that weight in check, Jason. And if you prove to be a very good blocker, just know that the conversation will be had. Now, I don't know. I haven't seen the kid in person or anything like that. So I don't know how well he moves, you know, how athletic he is. Just from his high school stuff, looks like a pretty solid athlete. But yes, if all of a sudden they're looking around going, who could the next center be? Oh, hey, Jason, what do you think about? Hey, we want you to get maybe 270, 275. And then all of a sudden it goes up 280, 285. No, I don't think he's going to be an old lineman, but yeah, you never know, I suppose.
Yep. That's the gigantic freshman tight end.
Big dude.
That's big. That's big. And if he maintains some athleticism and that 260 is like a really good 260, like there's just not a lot of tight ends in the Big 12 of that size. So if you've got tight ends like Daniel Parker and Llewellyn of that size and are physical, you just don't see that a lot. Now you see it a lot in the Big 10. Right. And I think you'll probably see some more of that in the SEC, which is good. But in the Big 12, that can be an advantage over some of these defenses.
Yeah. So we'll see how quickly the young freshmen can earn their ways onto the field. So that's definitely something we're going to continue to monitor. Okay. Let's get to Call Your Shot. And we ask you guys, what are you most excited about when it comes to this tight end group for OU? This first one comes from Zach Larkin on Twitter, who he says, most excited to watch Daniel Parker manhandle some DEs and linebackers and sneak out for some TD grabs. That is a great way to describe what I think we're all expecting from Daniel Parker, from our man, Zach. I like how he put that.
Right. Yeah. That's really what you want, a punisher that gets rewarded every now and then, right, with a quick little throw and maybe get into the end zone, short yardage, goal line package stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah, and this other one comes from Taylor McCormick on Twitter, who says, obviously Braden Willis is going to have a big year, but I'm excited to see Caden Helms when he gets his time on the field this year. I don't know if it's just me, but I get Kyle Pitts vibes from that kid.
Well, I'm loving those vibes. If we get Kyle Pitts statistics from him, that's going to be even better. It's hard to know sometimes what the absolute ceiling for some of these young guys is going to be. You know, there's always every recruiting cycle, you have a new class and there's a ton of excitement and some guys make it. Some guys exceed, some guys you never hear from again. So just never really know who's going to pan out. But the comments earlier definitely looking good.
Yeah. All right, birthday shout-outs. A little light on the birthday shout-outs. So do you think people get gun-shy when we complain about there being too many?
No.
We haven't... That's not the way to put it. We haven't complained. We just kind of start laughing and we're like, oh my gosh, we're still going when we've got like 20 of them.
I think we had a bit of a backlog on some birthdays there for a little bit. So I think we're caught up and this just happens to be a light day. There's
okay.
Nothing wrong with that.
Happy 9th birthday to Andrew Foster.
Happy 11th birthday to Caleb the Cat Hill.
Happy 31st birthday to Chris. Oh, no. Stelly?
I can't. I was thinking Stel? Maybe Stell or it's not Stall. That's not Stall. I don't know.
S-T-E. What do you got? Steel?
Steel?
S-T-E-H-L-E. Steel?
Chris Steel?
Chris Stell? Steel. Chris, hopefully we got one with the, got it with one of those.
Happy 36th birthday to Kevin Lutz.
Happy birthday to Adeline Olive, and happy adoption day to Kerrigan Olive.
Awesome.
Big week for the Olive family. Congratulations, guys. All right, let's finish up with our winners and losers of the weekend. But first, attention business owners. You need Insurica in your life. Yeah, you do. Insurica is one of the country's largest insurance brokers with 30 offices throughout Oklahoma, Texas, and the Southwest. Insurica is able to customize programs by accessing the latest information from many insurance carriers. They compare and contrast coverage offerings and pricing in order to design a cost-effective, comprehensive program to meet your business's specific needs. Insurica's clients become best-in-class businesses by working with Insurica's team of advisors to manage risk. Purchasing insurance is only one way to protect your business. Best-in-class businesses win by avoiding a loss in the first place. If your business partners with Insurica, you'll save huge amounts of money and take back control of your total cost of risk. I'm an Insurica client, and you should be too. If your business wants to be best in class, connect with Insurica at Insurica.com. That's Insurica.com.
Guys, weather's getting warmer, but it doesn't matter because it's always hard seltzer season, and there's only one hard seltzer that we drink on this podcast, and that is Sonic Hard Seltzer from Coop Ale Works. It's perfect for any occasion. We drink it in the hot tub, by the fire, and at the tailgate. You can buy 12 packs of the iconic Sonic Drive-In flavors like Cherry Limeade and Ocean Water, or you can grab a citrus variety pack or a tropical variety pack. Find it at your local grocery, convenience, and liquor stores.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As always, Ted, kick us off. Who do you have as your winner of the weekend?
I've got to go, and maybe by the time everyone sees this, they will have met their demise by North Carolina, but you got to go with St. Peter's. To have a team like them, a 15 seed, make it to the Elite Eight is just an amazing story, and I don't even know if the story's over yet. North Carolina's playing good basketball right now. They've got an advantage on them in a couple of different ways, but so did Purdue. So did Kentucky. And this team's got a little bit of a mission mentality behind them right now. They got a groundswell of support. It's incredibly fun to watch them play. I think the story is amazing. And I like Manek. I want Manek to play well and maybe to make it there with North Carolina. But I got to tell you, I wouldn't be mad if I saw St. Peter's make it to the Final Four.
I wouldn't either. Right. And you look at, have you seen all the pictures of like their gym?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Looks like a high school gym.
A small high school gym.
Yes. What gym is better? St. Peter's or Fort Gibson?
Fort Gibson, not even close.
I agree.
Fort Gibson's like five times that size. It's crazy that they play in a gym that small. Can you imagine what it's like to that be your home gym that you play your big games in, and then find yourself in an Elite Eight matchup against North Carolina, national television, that huge, awesome venue? That's got to be an amazing feeling, man.
It's got to be an incredible feeling. Maybe they can get some warm-ups with their school logo on them from Adidas now if they go to the Final Four. Mustache Doug, that guy, I mean, you talk about just blowing up in popularity. I don't even remember how to say his last name. Doug, Mustache Doug. Love that guy. Big fan of that guy.
When he was sitting there with that plate of hot wings, I got an NIL deal. I just could not stop laughing. That was so funny. But, hey, man, I think it's a great story. And luckily, you know, for my rooting interest, there's really no loser coming out of that game. You know, if Manic makes it to the Final Four, North Carolina, I'll be happy for that. And if St. Peter's wins again, one of the best stories that we've seen when it comes to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Shaheen Holloway's last go at St. Peter's, right? I think everyone expects him to be the next coach at Seton Hall. So that's kind of a cool element too. It's like, it's the last ride for him with these guys. And I don't know. It is 1:54 Central time right now. That game doesn't tip off until 4:05 Central. So we don't know if St. Peter's won or not against North Carolina. I hope they do, because yep. that'd be awesome. Now, also North Carolina Duke would not suck either. So that's kind of a win-win for all college basketball fans. But I'm with you. They are what March Madness is all about. They are why we love this tournament so much. And this is what makes March Madness so special. It's what makes it unique in the world of sports, because as much as you want to say like, oh, it's not possible, like there's no way, like you could be St. Peter's, or there's, you remember George Mason back in the day, like it can happen in the NCAA tournament. That's why it's awesome. That's why you rarely hear people like, oh no, they can't get that done. It's because in the NCAA tournament, you never really know. And that's why it's awesome.
And it's not like, you know, sometimes you can, because of other upsets and other things happening, like you can find your way into a really beneficial bracket. Can you imagine St. Peter's making the Final Four, going through Kentucky, North Carolina, and Purdue? Like, that's unbelievable. That would be incredible.
We'll talk about it on Wednesday. How about that? All right, who do you have as your loser of the weekend?
I had to go with Villanova. They win, they advance, awesome. But the Moore kid, set for an MRI, left on crutches, did not look good the way that whole thing went down. Hated to see that. Happy that they made it. But once you get to that level and you get into the Final Four, it could be incredibly difficult. You absolutely have to have all hands on deck. Doesn't mean that they can't still do something special, but you hate to make it to that point, feel like you're right there with the chance to win a national championship, and you lose probably your best player.
Jay Wright is a damn good basketball coach. I'm not sure many people realize that they're in their third, like they could win their third championship in the last like six tournaments, I think.
Since 2016, right?
Yeah. Three out of six. That's dynasty, right? Like that's dynasty level stuff.
Well, someone made the comment that we could have a all blue blood Final Four. And I was like, okay, Duke, North Carolina, Kansas, and Villanova. And at first I was like, I don't know. But I mean, since they made this Final Four, I think that like may solidify them as a basketball blue blood, right?
It's got to. I mean, and there's a debate to be had about like, okay, do you have to call them like a new blue blood or new blood, blue blood, or whatever term you want to use. But yeah, are they a traditional blue blood in college basketball? No, but at some point when a program has the amount of success that Villanova has had under Jay Wright, like you get placed in the blue blood category. We could call it something different. I really don't care, but all I know is that team goes to Final Fours. That's what Jay Wright does. And if he wins his third championship in six seasons or in six tournaments, what? You can't tell me they're not a current blue blood. Well, whatever you want to call it, the elite
compared to
category.
The other blue bloods that we're going to be talking about being there, their recent success is better than all of those schools.
that's kind of a college football conversation as well. Like, is Georgia a blue blood program? No. Right? When you talk about historical success in college football, but you best believe they are an elite program now. I think Villanova is kind of the same conversation. Like, they may not be a historical blue blood in college basketball, but they are an elite level program now.
Yep.
So however you want to phrase it,
like, if you're playing Georgia, if Georgia's on your schedule next year, like, you're treating it like you're playing a blue blood right now. Like, that's how that game is currently. So it's probably the same thing with Villanova, and they've got the recent success. Their recent success is way better than Georgia's, right? I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Villanova shot 28% and won. That is something.
Wow.
If you like watching the basketball go in the basket, Villanova Houston was not for you. And I fall in that category where I was like, oh, make it end. I was like, oh, awesome. Villanova's going. Like, it was a brutal game to watch. My goodness. All right. Let's get to my winners and losers. But first,
Bishop McGinnis Catholic High School has a long tradition of educational excellence. With a 12-to-1 student-to-teacher ratio, no student is overlooked. Bishop McGinnis College Prep curriculum offers 22 AP courses. There are numerous clubs and organizations for students to join. And as a proud member of the OSSAA, there are 14 sports offered. If you want to provide the best possible educational and spiritual development for your children, contact Bishop McGinnis Catholic High School or visit bmchs.org. Financial aid is available.
And if you're a whiskey or bourbon drinker, stop what you're doing, head to your favorite liquor store and buy some Balcones products. You got to grab some of Balcones Lineage Single Malt Whiskey. It was just voted one of the top 20 whiskeys in the world by Whiskey Advocate, and you'll be shocked by how affordable it is. Also, you got to snag some of Balcones Baby Blue Corn Whiskey. Did you forget?
I did. It's made from blue corn. That's the fancy corn.
And that is why it has won more than 25 awards. What a horrible error.
Disaster.
Disaster has struck. Last but certainly not least, you got to buy some of Balcones Pot Still Bourbon. Its big flavors make it the perfect bourbon to drink year-round. In 2012, Balcones Single Malt won the Best in Glass competition, beating brands like Johnny Walker and Macallan. It became the first American distillery to win the competition. This stuff is the real deal, people. If you love great whiskey and bourbon at a great price, then Balcones products are the only way to go. The whiskey may be made in Texas, but the owners, yes, they are from Oklahoma. To find a liquor store that has it, visit BalconesDistilling.com. All right, for my winner of the weekend, thought about going with Max Verstappen. Ted, back on top.
Yeah. Shocker.
Yeah. Shocker. Won the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. But Ferrari, second and third. Leclerc and Sainz. I mean, it could be a Ferrari-Red Bull duel this season. Mercedes, where you at? Where you at, Lewis Hamilton?
His mind was not in the right place in the offseason, right? Did put the work in.
Yeah, I don't know. He's the best driver ever, so I'm going to go ahead. Yeah, he's fine. Also thought about here's an off-the-wall one for you. Also thought about going with Panther City Lacrosse Club in the National Lacrosse League. They play in Fort Worth. They're at Dickies Arena. Started the season 1-8. They have won 5 in a row and are in the playoff picture. So if you live in the DFW area, and I know we got a lot of listeners that do, go check out Panther City Lacrosse Club. Hottest team in the NLL, Ted.
5 straight. You got to love it.
And then I also thought about going OU softball. Now they're playing their final game against Baylor as we record this. I don't know if they've run ruled them yet. It's likely that they will because they've run ruled teams 13 games in a row. And they have outscored those opponents 139-8. And that was going into Sunday's game against Baylor.
And so is that 3 run rules this year already on Baylor?
I
looking for 4.
I believe that's correct.
They played them earlier in a tournament, right? So
yes,
or one of those. Yeah. So yeah, my guess is yes, we've got a run rule coming.
I mean, I suppose we could look it up. It's a quick Google, but you know, I'm just going to choose to believe that they run rule them. You know, is that?
Yeah.
Oh, actually, oh wow. Luckily, I looked it up. Middle of the sixth, Baylor 1, OU 0.
Whoa, right now?
Right now. See, this is just us taking advantage of their greatness. We just assumed that they were going to wipe the floor with Baylor. And so,
well, they did our twice.
our apologies to Baylor softball. You're putting up a good fight. I hope you lose.
Okay.
But man, I've got a lot of like honorable mentions. Also thought about going with Mike Gundy. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Going to get $1 million increase per season on his contract. Additionally, got a $1 million retention bonus over the next five seasons. The guy's gone to 16 straight bowl games. He's accumulated 7-10 win seasons. So now he is going to be making $7.5 million a year as the head coach of the Oklahoma State Cowboys. And he has earned every dollar of it.
I agree. And I still believe that considering the circumstances, the school, the state, the fact that he's won as many games as he has, I think he's probably the most underrated coach in the entire country.
Yeah. Got to call him Big Money Mike now.
Big Money Mike.
Big Money Mike Gundy. But my winner of the weekend is another Mike. That's Mike Krzyzewski, headed to his 13th Final Four. Duke beats Arkansas 78-69 in a game that really never felt in doubt for the Blue Devils. I don't know what else to say other than that Duke's playing at a really high level. Man,
they
nobody is playing better than them right now, and they've got dudes. Vaccaro, Kills, Griffin, Roach, Williams, Moore, and it seems like they're all playing well at the right time.
Yep.
And, yeah, you know, you go back, just going back and thinking about that embarrassing loss to North Carolina in Coach K's last home game, we talked about that possibly being like the start of the championship DVD, right? Coach K saying the season's not over in his speech after that game. But then they got blown out by Virginia Tech in the ACC tournament. And it felt like, okay, this team doesn't have what it takes to win it all. They've been so impressive over the last couple of weeks. And man, I can't remember my mind changing on a team like so drastically from like weekend to weekend in the NCAA tournament. It's like going into the opening weekend, I was like, is Duke going to make it out of the opening weekend? And now after this one, I'm like, no one's beating that team. Too good. They're too talented, too good, playing too well, mixing things up defensively. Players are, you know, they feel like they really have some input in this thing. You got the whole it's Coach K's last ride thing. I don't know, man. It's got the team of destiny feel to it.
Yeah, and he made a comment, just to paraphrase a little bit, that, you know, the way that this team has really taken off, like he's able to like stop coaching a little bit, so to speak, and just kind of step back and let these guys kind of go do their thing. And they're starting to thrive in that type of environment. And they're hot right now. And hey, the tournament's all about getting hot at the right time, man. And they are hot, red hot.
Yeah, and whether they get North Carolina or St. Peter's there in the Final Four, either
may
matchup.
Not matter.
I mean, we talked about it. Either matchup is going to be awesome, and I'm picking Duke to win.
Yep.
Because man, they are rolling. Can you believe it would be the first time that Duke and Carolina will have played in the NCAA tournament if they play each other?
It almost seems like there's been a massive effort to make sure that they avoid each other. Interesting.
Huh.
Wow.
Huh. That's interesting.
That would be awesome though, to a Duke North Carolina Final Four for his last. That'd be incredible.
North Carolina fans, and once again, we're recording this before that game even takes place, so we could sound like idiots right here. But we thought North Carolina fans like experienced one of the most satisfying feelings they've ever experienced doing what they did in Coach K's last home game. Could you imagine if they sent him home in the Final Four?
Woo. That's
the peak of fandom for a North Carolina fan, I feel like.
It's the peak of fandom for North Carolina, and it's the bottom of the barrel for Duke, right? There would be some anger in that one.
Especially
if it was like a controversial type of game. It's crazy. That would be fun.
No foul call on the last play of the game. Oh, it would be something. All right, for my loser of the weekend, thought about going with Italy. I don't follow soccer very closely, but I saw this. Italy lost to North Macedonia 1-0, which knocked them out of World Cup qualifying and means that Italy will miss back-to-back World Cups for the first time ever.
I love that it's North Macedonia. Macedonia is a tiny country to begin with. The fact that it's a North Macedonia is hilarious.
I had no idea. I saw it. And I was like, wait, what? Went and watched the highlights and everything.
Come on, Italy. Get it together.
I will say the Macedonia goal was pretty sick. It was. But my loser of the weekend, the Oklahoma City Thunder, and it's not for the reason you think. We all know what the mission is at this point in the season. We all know. And they gave us a scare against the Denver Nuggets. I mean, they got Jokic, guy maybe the MVP. They had Trey Mann and Darius Bazley, who now is also hurt, having an MRI. And essentially a group of G League guys. You look up, they're playing the Nuggets Saturday night, and somehow the Thunder have a 105-103 lead with under 3 minutes to go in the game. And I'm just sitting here going, what's happening here? How did we get here?
We did this crap at the end of last season. All right. We've got to lose these games that come down to the wire tight late. Let's go.
Now they did end up losing, but it was entirely too close. Entirely too close. It was causing me stress. I didn't need it in my life, Ted, but just don't scare us like that, boys. What are we doing? I mean,
you've switched over because to start off the season,
correct.
You were cheering for wins, but
literally no one is playing. So right. It's one of those where I was of the belief where I was like, okay, if Josh Giddey and SGA are both out there and they're developing chemistry and they are, you know, making each other better and we're winning some games because of that, then so be it. All for it. We're building for the future. Both of those guys aren't on the court. Lou Dort's, he's done for the year. Like, none of the players that you're trying to build around for the future are out there, except for I do think Trey Mann, man, he is going to be a big time scorer for this franchise moving forward. But none of those guys are out there. So the chemistry building is no longer a component to this for me. So now it's like, yeah, I'm to the point where it's like, okay, don't win. What's happening here? And they scared. I was worried. I mean, Poku of all people puts them up 105-103 with a couple minutes to go. And I'm just like sitting with my head in my hand going, what is happening?
Well, hey, we're getting the chemistry and all of that. They're building that in the training room now. That's good. As long as they're in the same place, right?
I guess team announced, right? Josh Giddey done for the rest of the year with that hip issue he's been dealing with for like a month now. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's availability for the rest of the season seems rather questionable, but I think everyone's feeling really, really good about building around those two guys moving forward. And you look at what Giddey did in his rookie year, man, ends up averaging 12.5 points, almost 8 rebounds, over 6 assists a game. Like, undoubtedly he's going to be first team all rookie. So, you know, in hindsight, right, we were all kind of annoyed with how last season finished and how that affected the lottery odds. And then the Thunder end up not getting, you know, a top three pick or not even close. And you end up with Giddey. That appears to have worked out pretty decently, but I would prefer they have a really high draft pick, like one or two this year. That's just what I would prefer.
Totally agree. I love Giddey, and whenever you look like those, look at those stats, those are good. But one of the things is like maybe the first 6 weeks of the season, it was really slow for him. And naturally, right? It's a tough transition, but the type of basketball he was playing really in his peak this season it's way better than even that stat line. And the capabilities with him they're next level, man. He's a really fun player.
Yeah. If the Thunder could add Jabari Smith or maybe Paolo Banchero, I wouldn't be mad. Now Chet Holmgren scares me, man. That skinny. It's just body, the way he moves. Now he's extremely skilled for his size, but if you can tell, or I guess if you can't tell, I've started going down the mock NBA draft rabbit hole. I'm hoping the Thunder have a top three pick. Feeling really good if they got a top three pick. Although the general consensus from the people that cover, you know, the draft for a living, deep draft this year. So who knows?
Good, good, good. I'm with you on the Holmgren kid. That's, I don't know.
I like Jaden Ivey from Purdue too.
Yeah.
Even though he disappeared. Like, I don't know who that was in his body. Like, there was an imposter for Jaden Ivey in the St. Peter's game. I don't know what the hell that was, but I also wouldn't mind him playing for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I like guys that can get buckets.
Yep. I agree.
I feel like I interrupted you. You were about to say something hilarious about Chet Holmgren.
No. Nope, nope, nope. Well, all I was saying is he's obviously incredibly skinny, and durability looks like a factor, but the last time the Thunder took a guy that looked way too skinny, Kevin Durant, it ended up working out pretty good. He's no Kevin Durant, but I don't know.
I thought you were about to say last time the Thunder took a guy way too skinny, his name was Poku, and look at how that has turned out.
Well, maybe I should have said that. Yes.
Sam Presti, he'll draft the right guy. He'll draft the right guy. I don't even need to be worrying about this right now, Ted. It's okay. It's fine.
Unnecessary
stress. Just like watching them almost beat the Nuggets in Denver in a meaningless game.
They're going to be fine. They're going to be fine. As long as they stay healthy next season, they'll be fine.
And on that note, episode 200 in the books. We'll have a new podcast that'll drop Thursday morning. Just a reminder, you can hear Teddy from 3 to 6 on 94.7 The Ref. You can hear me from 3 to 5 on SiriusXM Big 12 Radio, channel 375. Hope you all have a great week. Until next time, we appreciate y'all for listening. Do what you always do, Oklahoma. Take care of each other.
Just one more time.